Everybody should see slide one here. I want to say it's a pleasure to see you all here, and I appreciate your attendance. And my goal for the evening is that our time together will be meaningful for all of us. For the last 8 years, Tom McFall and I have partnered to write and publish two books about science and religion. Last month, we completed our first draft of a manuscript that we intend to publish as our third book, also in science and religion. These three books overlap and are a series. Previously, Tom and I have made presentations to Kerygma and other places from themes in these first two books. I have found Kerygma, your group, to be very attentive and engaging, and you also ask good questions, which I appreciate, and I hope to get our time together will be meaningful. The word evolution is a key concept. It appears in our title, Christianity and Evolutionary Pluralism. Evolution is the process by which different physical materials and living organisms have developed from earlier forms. And tonight we'll talk a little more about that. On August 16, 2020, Walt summarized fundamentalism to you. This arose during the 19th century at Princeton University. For fundamentalists, many of whom are evangelical Christians, the Bible is viewed as a source of historical facts. The Bible is to be read literally, and it is inerrant. The major source of conflict between fundamentalists and modern science was over evolution and how it was taught in schools. Major legal battles over this issue have received national attention. Well, it turns out there are four specific positions that have emerged from evangelicals and fundamentalists that deal with this conflict. And what I'm going to do for you tonight is summarize each of those four positions. Then I will show you something that Tom and I think is unique, yet still adds an important contribution to this conversation. We will specifically compare these four positions with 32 specific methods of modern science. Here are our first two books available on Amazon. On the left side, if you enter God is Here to Stay in the books search window on the first page of Amazon, our book will be your first hit. Rodney Stark, author and opinion leader, was one of the endorsers. And as you can see there, his endorsement appears on our cover. A remarkably original and compelling book. This book deals with the most important of all questions. Our second book was on the right side, was published in 2017, God and Randomness. And you can also access more information on Amazon by entering God and Randomness there in the search window, and our book will be your first hit. And our five current Kerygma presentations in the month of November build on the themes of these two books. If you'd like to read more about tonight's presentation from an author that is not connected with us, I recommend The Language of God by Dr. Francis Collins. Francis Collins is an evangelical Christian and one of the most distinguished scientists in our country today. And this book is authoritative, well-written, and has interesting personal examples. Okay, let's start with the question, how did all this happen? So in the upper left-hand corner here, you see the galaxy here. And from the stars that make up the galaxy, there's where there was at least one solar system that developed, illustrated over here. And eventually, life developed on this planet Earth here. And eventually wound up to be Homo sapiens, us. people who are self-aware, curious, they want to know how stuff works. So we're going to talk about some of the ideas about how this happened, and we're going to talk, and that's going to lead us into this area of conflict I mentioned earlier. This is the best illustration I've seen on that captures the size and the history of the universe. So right down this axis here, imagine this to be a bell housing here, okay? The surface, right down the axis here is time. And the Big Bang started here, labeled quantum fluctuations, happened about 13.8 billion years ago. Then about 400,000 years after the Big Bang, there was the subatomic particles had cooled enough. So while this is going on, this is like infinitely hot, infinitely small singularity. And there was this process of what's called inflation. And then about 400,000 years ago, the subatomic particles started to come together. What this means is that what was opaque over here in this region is now transparent, or beginning, light could beginning to emerge from this hot, dense, expanding ball that will eventually become the universe. And then there was a length of time here of about 400 million years when the gravitational and accretion forces started to form up the raw material for stars that allowed them to start burning. It happened here. And this whole process was expanding. And in fact, even recently out here, the rate of expansion is actually accelerating here. So this is like a really nice summary of the whole of that whole process. And I'm going to call that a physical evolution. The idea is that the subatomic forces, particles, the standard model that kind of summarizes that, physically evolved into what we have today in terms of the matter. So this is the broad consensus we have for modern science today. The universe is 13.8 billion years. It started with a Big Bang, or quantum fluctuations, if you will. The first stars started to burn about 13.4 billion years ago. Now, you can say billion, and it's kind of rolls off the tip of your tongue, but billion is like incomprehensibly large. The great U.S. Senator of the 1960s from Illinois, Everett Dirksen, has a famous quote, "A billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking some real money." The solar system then and Earth started to form about 4.5 billion years ago. The origin of life after the Earth started was settled down and not as many bombardments and accretion occurred. When the Earth was ready, 3.8 billion years ago, life started. Another major important part in the theory of evolution is life evolved from common ancestors. And our species, Homo sapiens, first appeared about 200,000 years ago. Just real briefly, this is how the sun and the solar system evolved. The material from a first generation star, our sun is a second generation star. That first generation star exploded in something like a supernova, if it wasn't a supernova, and then condensed in our part of the galaxy. And the residual spin started to spin off a little side area here that eventually developed into what are called protoplanets that eventually became planets. Meanwhile, the center area that would become the sun was continued to spin. Gravity was at work, and eventually the sun lit up and became produced radiant energy here. And so here's a top view of that. This is what the solar system might have looked like in those early times. Let's take a look at the origin of life, just some basic, really basic conclusions that are current today. The origin of life 3.8 billion years ago. There are at least seven explanations for the origin of life. None of them are widely accepted. Scientific American calls this, this is a well-respected, well has large circulation magazine here, journal, has called this, this is the number one unsolved question in science today, the origin of life. Before life existed, we had lifeless, inanimate matter. Then there was some kind of creation type event, boundary. And after that, we had sustainable, replicating, evolving life. So the question is, how does a diverse collection of non-living molecules randomly come together and morph into the first living cells? And that's unknown. But this is a really a tough problem here. The environment on the Earth 3.8 billion years ago is mostly unknown. The chemistry of that at that time hasn't been worked out, and it's almost impossible to replicate those conditions. So according to modern science, though, this is a randomness was a key in this process and how the molecules came together, how the cell membranes might have formed, how the genetic material may have come together. What is biological evolution? Evolution is a key word. It is a process in which a living organism develops from earlier life forms. Natural selection drives evolution. So for example, if you have a brown hare that lives in the Arctic, and there is a genetic mutation in his genomes that where he produces offspring that are more white than brown, that offspring will be more better camouflaged from the predators that they have. So if you wait long enough for enough generations, eventually those Arctic hares will turn all white because of the advantage that they have. So the key elements for evolutionary advancement are competition with other species that compete for food sources in that environment, food sources, sex drive, attractiveness from one gender to another, the environment can change. Deserts can become more forested and vice versa. And so as the environment changes over the years, that's going to have an effect on how evolution proceeds and your survival methods and how the species gathers food and survives. I want to give you three contexts for evolution here that I think will help us tonight. The first one is, this is a oft-quoted sentence here. Nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution by natural selection. And that occurs in Francis Collins' book, by the way, who's an evangelical Christian. We'll say some more about him in a minute. Biological evolution is non-controversial right now in modern science. Evolution by natural selection is not something to believe in. Science follows the evidence. Established science is not an ensemble of beliefs. It's a system of ideas supported by verifiable evidence. I have about 40 years of experience in applied science in my career, and I completely support the sentences in this paragraph here. The measurements by separate groups using different methods have shown that meteorites are about 4.55 billion years old, plus or minus, plus a billion or minus 0.01 billion years. The age of moon rocks is 4.5 billion years, plus or minus 0.01. The age of the sun is 4.5 billion years, plus or minus 0.1 billion years. This, by the way, the age of the sun is determined by, we know what the process is. It's thermonuclear fusion. Hydrogen atoms are coming together and forming helium atoms, which is most of, and then the leftover energy from that process is radiated out, and we are the beneficiaries of that. So there's a lot of solid evidence that go into this age of the sun here. The age of the oldest crust on the Earth from volcanoes is 4 billion years, plus or minus 0.1. All of this, these bullet points all hang together, and they all come from different disciplines in modern science. Evolution is not necessarily quick. So for example, the coelacanth fish is an extremely successful bottom feeding fish that hasn't changed much for 360 billion years. There are many bacteria types, much larger in variation than what is in invertebrates. Among bacteria and viruses, there is speciation that occurs all the time. New species occur. So for example, the coronavirus, the pandemic that we're in now, swine flu, AIDS, and Legionnaire's disease. These afflictions did not exist until they mutated from previous forms, becoming new species, enable them to infect life not previously accessible to them because of these genetic evolutionary mutations. Natural selection never claims to be a perfect design or even a good design. Natural selection is only a design that is more effective than competing species, allowing survival long enough to reproduce. Nothing else matters. Here is some context about us, humans. Among the mammals in the tree of life is a branch called primates, such as lemurs, monkeys, and the great apes, including humans. It is commonly thought that humans evolved from monkeys. Not true. We all have a common ancestor. The ape that is closest to us is a chimpanzee. And in other words, chimps and humans have a relatively recent common ancestor. Chimps and humans have every muscle, every bone in their bodies in common. Chimps and humans even have the same facial expressions, but most importantly, we have only a trifling differences in our DNA. The four positions I mentioned earlier are detailed in this book here, Four Views on Creation, Evolution, and Intelligent Design, published by Zondervan in 2017. These are, in this book, what you have are the leaders of each of the four positions, state their position, their specific guidelines, and it's pretty well written by each of the four. They're limited 30,000 words, and then the other leaders of the other positions are allowed to critique the first position. And then the leader of that position is allowed to critique the critique. So it's like a conversation amongst these four leaders here. The first one is Young Earth Creationism, which we're going to refer to as YEC. And the leader of that is Ken Ham, who's published Answers in Genesis. That's a chapter title here. Then there's Old Earth Creationism. We'll explain this a little more. OEC, which the leader is Hugh Ross, Reasons to Believe is a chapter title. And we have Intelligent Design Creationism, which is published or written by Meyer, the Discovery Institute, is the intelligent Stephen Meyer. The last one is evolutionary creation, EC, Deborah B. Harmsma from BioLogos. Deborah is the president of BioLogos. BioLogos was founded by the author of the book we just looked at on the language of God. The young earth, here's a summary of young earth creationism, which is position one. The entire Bible is inerrant, factual, and must be interpreted literally. Young earth creationism rejects modern scientific theory of biological evolution and evolution of the universe. This is a pre-modern view. In other words, it's a view that's consistent with what we saw before 1543. 1543 is the date when Copernicus published his thesis on a sun-centered universe, when up to that time, it had been a earth-centered universe. Young earth creationism, in Genesis, God created the universe in 6 days and then rested on the seventh day. How long is a day? Well, we get the answer in Psalm 90, verse 4. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it was past. In 2 Peter of chapter 3, verse 8, we see with the Lord one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like one day. So young earth creationism takes one day in Genesis and calls it 1,000 years. That would make the earth 10,000 years old or younger, which is just way, way younger than the disciplines of modern science give us. Old Earth creationism, OEC, backs away a little bit from young Earth creationism. I'll have a summary chart for you here in a minute. Old Earth creationism accepts the Big Bang. The Earth's age is 4.5 billion years, but OEC rejects plain words reading of the Bible. The words have changed over time and depend on context, so that allows them to have this conclusion here about the Earth's age being 4.5 billion years. Old Earth creationism rejects biological evolution, however. All life appeared suddenly by divine command. So they also recognize and emphasize the gaps between species. I'll have something to say about that in a minute. And another word for this is God of the gaps. So if we don't understand something, if we don't understand these gaps in biology, what we're going to say is that God's creationary work filled those gaps. So acceptance with modern science, is it consistent with modern science? The answer is yes for the evolution of the physical universe, no for biological evolution. And we're going to look at that a little more. Intelligent design creationism assumes the entire Bible is inerrant and factual. It's closer to old earth creationism than to young earth creationism. And their basic idea is if you accept evolution, it's going to put you on a slippery slope and it's going to lead eventually to atheism. And why is that? The reason is evolution implies godless, random, and unguided processes. So you don't need any kind of a design creator if you hold to evolution. IDC also assumes there are creation gaps, and they base this on irreducible complexities. And biological evolution is different. An example of irreducible complexities is the eye. If you look closely at the formation of the eye and both humans and other areas in biology, there doesn't seem to be a clear pathway for evolution to have produced an eye here. And there's several other examples here. Francis Collins has a good comments on this in his book, that I showed you earlier. My comments about intelligent design are these. Intelligent design is not predictive. That's one of the main characteristics of science, the scientific theories. You want it to be predictive and predict results and observations that maybe haven't been seen before or not anticipated. Also, it's not falsifiable. That's a key component in science, is if your hypothesis is falsifiable by other data not yet taken or not yet seen here, those are the kind of hypotheses you want. You want falsifiable hypotheses. Also, this is not peer reviewed. I have 40 publications in the peer-reviewed literature in my career. Every single time I sent in a manuscript, that manuscript went to an editor of a journal, Applied Optics, for example. That editor then took a copy of my manuscript and sent it out to typically three or more reviewers. And the reviewers read it and made comments like, either it's acceptable as is, no, it would be acceptable, but if you made the following changes, or it's not acceptable at all. That's what peer review is, that I can tell you from personal experience. So intelligent design creationism was presented in legal challenges in various states around the country to teach this in the classroom as an alternative to biological evolution. And intelligent design creationism was ultimately rejected in the courts. And I think the reason why it was rejected had to do with these three and probably some more reasons that you have up here. Now I want to show you a little calculation. I'm a physicist, and it's hard for me to talk about anything without doing a calculation. So here's your calculation for the evening. My contention is that evolution applies broadly to our Earth. And so the question is, how broadly is that? Well, the diameter of the Earth is 7,918 miles. That means the radius of the Earth is 3,959 miles. The thickness of the biosphere is 7.8 miles. That comes from an online source. And we all know, if you see information online, it absolutely has to be right. So this is where it came from. The surface area of the Earth is 4 pi r squared. So you just plug in these numbers here, and you get 2 × 10⁸ square miles. That means the surface area for life only. So if you discount the deserts and the polar regions, but not the oceans, because there's life, certainly life down there, you get a surface area for life of 9.8 × 10⁷ square miles. So the volume of the biosphere is S2 times the thickness here, which is 7.6 × 10⁸, or 760 million cubic miles. That's the volume of the biosphere. So evolution applies over the entire biosphere of 760 million cubic miles, and it's 3.8 billion years old. So that covers both space and time here. And today we have over 2 million species today. So my conclusion is, this huge, huge, unbelievably large volume over an unbelievably long time, well, there might be a gap or two in our current understanding of evolution. The fourth position that we have here is evolutionary creationism. Evolutionary creationism completely accepts the modern scientific view of the Big Bang and evolution. So Deborah B. Harsma, let me give you a quote from her. Evolution is not a worldview in opposition to God, but a natural mechanism by which God providentially achieves his purposes. Evolutionary creation is the view that God created the universe, earth, and life over billions of years, and that the gradual process of evolution was crafted and governed by God to create the diversity of life on earth. Okay, just in the spirit of full disclosure here, this view right here is closest to my view and the closest one to Tom's view. Now we're going to take a look at these four views in comparison to what does modern science have to say. Oh, wait, there's this other side. Before we do that, let me show you, let me give you a summary of the four positions. Here are the four positions: young earth creationism, old earth creationism, intelligent design creationism, evolutionary creationism. So we make this little comparison table here. Does this view, is it acceptable? Does it accept modern theory of physical evolution and its timeline? Young earth creationism, no. Old earth creationism, yes. Intelligent design, yes. Plus finely tuned universe implies a creator God. And evolutionary creationism is yes. Acceptance of the modern theory of biological evolution and its timeline, YEC is no. OEC is no, based on creation gaps in the biological record. IDC is no, based on natural nature's irreducible complexity. And EC is yes. The last column is consistent with evangelical Christianity. Do you accept Jesus Christ as the only path to salvation? And all four of them say yes. So let me say, before I show you the comparison with modern science, let me make some other comments here in terms of questions and answers. How do each of these four positions compare with modern science? So I'm going to show you that. What reference can be used for modern science? My answer is the National Academy of Sciences. This is the most prestigious, most authoritative some members of the National Academy of Sciences have Nobel Prizes. If you're a member of the National Academy of Sciences, almost all your papers are going to get automatically published. Your books are going to get published. You're going to be chair of plenary sessions at scientific meetings. How can such a comparison be made with the four positions in modern science? I'm going to show you a feature comparison table. When you buy a house, you typically are going to make a feature comparison table in your mind. How much does it cost? How many square feet does it have? Where is its location? How much work am I going to have to do? Or is it move-in ready? Those are the kind of basic features you're going to make for each house you see. And you're going to kind of organize that in a comparison table. If you go to Consumer Reports magazine and look at their write-ups there, almost every article in there has a comparison table. What features can be used in such a comparison? The answer is, in the National Academy of Science literature, we read that and we identified 32 such features. Okay. Also, I'll just show you the chart, table here in a minute. This is original. I claim that this is original and contributes to the conversation. Neither Tom or I have seen anything like this. Okay, so here is an example, and we have, I didn't print this all out, it would be too much, but I just want to give you an idea of the flavor. So this first feature of modern science, good modern science does this, explains natural phenomena with natural based causes. And each of the four positions got a score from 0 to 3. 0 means it's not consistent with modern science at all. A 3 was it's completely consistent with modern science. 1 or 2 are intermediate positions here. Good modern science fosters technical innovation. And you can see the scoring here. Relationships and explanations between natural phenomena are sought. And the scoring here. So IDC got a 1 here. The 24th feature of modern science, explanations can be falsified. They all get zero on this. They can't, not all of the assumptions and positions of these four positions can be falsified. The scoring, you should ask the question, where did the scoring come from and who did it? The answer is, Tom and I did the scoring. There are 96 different cells. And Tom and I have our careers are each in our own way, are based on being objective, rational, and looking beyond our own worldview. But I suspect after this gets published, there are going to be individuals from these four positions here that are going to argue with us. And I expect that. And my answer is going to be, well, I encourage you to set up your own table like this, and your own comparison table, score it as you see it. Also, we have given the reasons for our scoring in another table here, which is like 3 or 4 pages long. So we're trying to be as open as possible on this. So 25th feature here, good modern science does this: falsified explanations are rejected in favor of ones that agree with all applicable observations here. Many explanations are quantifiable. This is the second slide here. So feature 27, comprehensive observations and testing of explanations are encouraged. Some explanations are rejected and not published or presented. The reason I want to go through this is because it gives you, I think it'll give you a flavor for what modern science is and what the methods of modern science. And I support and I completely agree with all 32 of them here. 29, successful explanations that reject recent observations are strengthened. Predictions from accepted explanations are compared to the data. Evidence are meticulously observed and documented without bias. A little story about this. Charles Darwin, when he returned from his round-the-world voyage on the Beagle of 5 years, and he collected an enormous amount of biological material and sent a lot of biological material home, probably his most important observation were finches on the Galapagos Islands that definitely showed a preference for the food sources and the distance it was from the east coast of South America on the equator. So Charles Darwin took at least 20 years of meticulously going through these biological materials, thinking about explanations for what could possibly explain all this biodiversity here. And he presented some of his conclusions to a learned society. His good friend Wallace, he corresponded with him. He corresponded with farmers, veterinarians, zookeepers, and in 1859, he published his Origin of Species, which explained his theory of evolution by natural selection. And he had no idea of what caused these minute variations in species from one generation to the next. So it turned out that in 1953, Watson and Crick got the Nobel Prize for the structure of DNA, for their explanation of the structure of DNA, which is held up. And this provided a wonderful confirmation of the theory of evolution back in 1859, when Darwin didn't know what really caused it here. So that's consistent with this one here. Predictions from competing explanations are compared with the data, and the evidences are meticulously observed and documented without bias. So I want to make some comments for you tonight about the side-by-side comparison. The National Academy of Sciences references are given. Everything that we've given, we've given are transparent and showed where the numbers come from in our references. And our claim is that the National Academy of Sciences is the most trustworthy source for the 32 characteristics. We've also given a thorough account for how the scoring was done. And each position can judge their consistency with modern science with each of the 32 characteristics. Side-by-side comparisons are, this side-by-side comparison in this comparison table here is probably unique in the discussion. Side-by-side comparisons add considerably to the conversation. Here are the results from percent consistency with modern science. Young Earth creationism has no consistency whatsoever with modern science. Evolutionary creationism is almost completely consistent with modern science, but not perfect. And old Earth creationism, intelligent design creation are intermediate here. Young Earth creationism completely inconsistent. A young Earth creation YEC worldview is unscientific, is our conclusion. OEC and IDC are only 23% and 83% with modern science respectively. It is not surprising that IDC failed in the course where they're claimed to be a valid scientific alternative to evolution. All four positions failed. Number 24, explanations can be falsified. And like I said earlier, if people disagree with our scoring, let them make their own side-by-side comparison table and justify their scoring like we've done. So that's what I came to summarize for you tonight. And it would be, and I am sure that we'll have a productive and satisfying discussion here like I always have in the past here. Okay, so I'm gonna stop sharing here.